we as humans and our buyers, even in B2B tech, are human beings. We research, we talk, we learn, we go to events, we talk to our colleagues consistently. Not when a budget is hired or lowered, right? Or when, you know, you all of a sudden get some extra money and you put some extra dollars to this display ad.
This is Revenue Makers, the podcast by Sixth Sense, investigating successful revenue strategies that pushed companies ahead.
Saima, so question for you. Who is the greatest growth marketer you've ever met?
The greatest growth marketer I've ever met.
That's a loaded question.
I know, very loaded question. There's this guy, Adam Kaiser. I don't know if you know him.
Kind of great. All right. Thank you. That's not what I was going for. But anyway, I want to ask you that because we have never really had a true sort of like, let's talk about that as a discipline of marketing.
Topic, yeah.
But we have a great guest today, Alana Haas from Firemon, who heads up their integrated campaigns and growth marketing. And that's what we did. We had a throwdown discussion about growth marketing. That was really great. Talking about everything from brand, demand, the definition, ton of good stuff. And then, of course, we talked about data and measurement, which happy place for you.
There you go. And Alana is fantastic because she's just played so many roles over the years and she is opinionated. And I love a great sort of, you know, a passionate discussion about what has worked in the real world and how we need to pivot. And so I think even in just the first 10 minutes, folks will take away specific examples and ideas of how to leverage some of this in their own growth marketing strategies. Really, really great conversation.
Yeah. I loved it. Let's get to it.
Let's do it.
So Alana, you're here. We've met in person. Actually, this is the rare twice in person. More so than virtual. So that's like a new thing. Thanks for joining. We got a great conversation. I know we're going to have a great conversation. We have a great background, ton of experience. Why don't you do the little intro, let people know where it's all been from.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been so fun running into you and chatting. And thank you for having me here. Overall, about 20 years in B2B tech, started in sales, which love that. Gives so much insights when you actually sit with customers and do a lot of forecasting and presenting. Switched a bit and got an MBA in marketing and marketing strategy and how that affects business models, and have been doing different elements of brand, demand, growth, lifecycle marketing. What is the hottest jargon topic name you want to throw out there? Omnichannel. I've had all those in my different titles, revenue marketing, all those in the last about 15 years, and thrilled to be talking to you. Really excited about everything we're going to discuss, and just a little tidbit, all these thoughts and opinions are my own, not affiliated with any past or present employer.
I love the disclaimer, but it's also where some of our experiences, right? And just the fact that you've been through sales and you've played so many different roles in marketing, you've seen a thing or two, I would imagine, right? And so if we just jump right into it, talk to me about budgeting and marketing and how much of a role that should play in what you know needs to happen or where you need to go.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And one thing I kind of didn't mention, the intro that I think plays a part too in the experience, and I'll answer the question, is I've also been at some very, very, very big brands and some smaller Series C, kind of scrappy, not official startups, but like scale-ups, I think is the official term. So I've seen different budgets. I've seen very many different line items. And what I think is the best practice, if I should say, is that budget should never be marketing dollars or really not an on-off. You don't just start something and you're like, okay, we're going to throw out a campaign and then we're going to just turn it off. Or brand, sure, we're going to do an event and then turn it right off. That's really not going to build consistency. You're not going to get that recall. And at the end of the day, you're not going to get to trust and to authenticity and to, you know, all those elements that buying behavior, like basic human psychology, is based off of. I was thinking about it. We as humans and our buyers, even in B2B tech, are human beings. We research, we talk, we learn, we go to events, we talk to our colleagues consistently. not when a budget is hired or lowered, right? Or when, you know, you all of a sudden get some extra money and you put some extra dollars to this display ad. We're constantly doing that. And so I think budget, to your question, needs to be thoughtfully planned out and allocated. And I realize there's obviously going to be moments of increase, economic factors, and, you know, motions of decrease. But you need allocation that's somewhat consistent and throughout, and not drastically cut and allocated the business needs to be.
How do you do that? Because I agree with you, everything you said. How do you do that in a world where it's all about hitting the number? It's all about we're lagging. We need to pivot. We need to quickly do something. How do you deal with the panic moments that maybe senior executives are feeling or seeing based on trajectory?
I've spoken to different executives. There's definitely an element of change management that has to happen at times. There's an element of proof points that has to happen, convincing discussions. And of course, by nature, some businesses and some executives may get it better than others. I do think that showcasing, and I think we're going to get there in this conversation at some point, showcasing how especially brand and some of that top of funnel, because your point, right? Numbers, numbers, numbers. Showing how that trust that is required to get to the number, right? Everybody wants pipeline and opportunities and growth. And I am a firm believer you cannot have that without the trust and the consistent messaging in market. And so in order to kind of get one, you have to do the other, and showcasing some of that, being able to actually tie brand and brand elements and that trust factor to pipeline with the attribution models of multi-touch attribution models that I know we'll chat about too, and just being able to showcase some of that, do some really interesting retargeting. I've done a really cool case study in my past where we actually focused on 200 accounts in pipeline, ran a brand, just like a trust, what are we doing for you commercial, CTV commercial. We got so much more increased engagement for those 200 accounts. I mean, it was something like 43% coming back to our digital property that had it in the prior 30 days or so. And so showcasing those numbers to help then the budget discussions is really what I've seen with success. And again, it definitely is not easy because you're right.
Growth marketing, right? It's in your title. It's in my title. I don't know what it means. No, I do know what it means, but I love to ask this question. You and I talked about this a little bit, yeah. I think, when we met too. Like, to your point, when you're talking about your intro, all the different titles and the clever names and the trendy names, how would you define growth marketing as it is right now for you?
This is, again, you know, my definition, not necessarily a, you know, don't look it up in Webster's, but my favorite class in my MBA program was monetizing business models. And it was actually within the marketing strategy concentration. Yeah. Favorite professor, my thesis ended up being partly based off that. And when I think of growth marketing, I almost think of monetizing business models, because growth is about monetization and how do we get there. But it doesn't only come from marketing, and it can't be. It has to be a collaborative, cross-functional, go-to-market strategy that even involves HR, because how you treat your employees, how you care about the environment, a lot of the different elements of HR policies and procedures, finance and legal. Are you a company that's easy to do business with? Do you approach your customers fairly with your pricing and discounting? All those elements have to do, again, with kind of how you as a firm, as a company, appear in the market, and then how marketing can portray you in the market to help you grow as a business. There's layers underneath, and then growth marketing is how that's brought together and sort of portrayed in the market. Those are the elements of the brand, and that's how that helps and interplays with growth marketing.
Well, it's a great kind of transition to talking about brand as well.
What do you think? What have you seen?
The most generic definition I've ever seen of it is that, like, if you think about demand gen mostly as top of funnel, that growth is just takes it all the way through post sale life cycle. That's another, you know, word, right? That's out there. And like, you're sort of, it's a much more holistic, which actually really does kind of tie back to your point of like, you know, monetizing business models. Cause your business model is not just acquiring customers, it's servicing customers and growing customers and all those different things. So I think that aligns really, really well. And then you've got people saying like growth is another name for demand gen, which I disagree with in terms of just like, again, like you could argue semantics of titles all day long. It doesn't really matter, right?
But I happen to agree with you. To me, demand gen is an element, sure, especially for sort of the lower funnel, right? Once we've gotten some of the intent signals in and we've looked at the data and we've understood what customers are actually, right? There's, again, we're going to add in some more jargon here, but demand creation, demand capture, and demand conversion. So if we think about that, demand gen, definitely in demand capture, demand conversion, but it's not in demand creation. And I think that's why I would not say that it's the same thing. Growth and demand gen just aren't the same exact thing.
I love the conversation around brand to demand and kind of all like that's become. Yeah, that's the new one. That's a new sort of catchy phrase. But given all that's changed in the world, both from an acquisition standpoint around like search and the 7,000 things you're reading every day about kind of AI changing search, the inability for privacy and tracking and all these different things that have led to the point of we're coming back to, we were in this world of B2B where it's like performance, measuring everything, every dollar has to get in. And like, of course you have to be generating and showing that value, but the pendulum is starting to, has swung and continues to swing back to brand in the sense that there are now things that you have to do. If you think about all of the things we're talking about around like LLM search and what Google's now doing, a lot of it is traffic is no longer the goal because you're not getting it. So creating brand awareness in other channels, you're getting more PR mentions and showing up there. That can influence how it comes up in an AI search. So we've started to swing back. How do you view brand just overall as a growth lever? You talked about that CTV example, which was great. Like other sort of like things that you've pulled that have been directly brand related that have helped you kind of hit against those growth goals.
I agree with a lot of what you said and see the trends and hear you. I'll give a couple examples and then I'll also give some like opinions on some of that. Because again, I have been at a couple of really big brands in my career where they have such established brand identity and trust. They are thought of as thought leaders. They are truly seen as like, when you're doing some research, I should ask that brand. They don't think of, I should ask this guy, or I should go and ask Reddit or, you know, some user group or something. They actually, and this is, I've done research, you know, you can test me on some of this. They will go to specific elements of those brands, even certain events of those brands, and those brands have communities such that they're almost tattooing their logos, right, on their bodies. That's a famous, you know, MBA school case study of Harley Davidson. When a brand becomes that much of a thought leader, a helper, seen as really they truly understand the space they're in. Now, that's obviously, you know, some of you might be saying, you guys might say like, oh, but that's a big brand. They have the budgets. They have the money. You know, we talk about Fortune top 10 to 50 brands here. Yeah, but I've also seen a much smaller Series C company doing it really, really well too, where their execs just really understand the mission, the purpose of their product, their brand, how it truly helps, and how to enable for the future state for their customers. And they really have a POV. So that brand has a standing. And then the whole org lines up because you can see how and why they say what they say, and the brand truly works aligned to that mission. You see it in the proof points, in the customer case studies. To your question earlier a little bit, how else can you use the brand? It can be done very strong, and the brand is thought of as that thought leader, that like, I don't have to go to ChatGPT and ask the question of how do I get this done? or what's my problem, I can go directly to their blog, their case studies, their event, and I know I'm going to get help. And I think a little bit of what you were saying earlier, right, in this day and age, what are some of the trends? I really think people sometimes just need some help. It's pretty easy, right? We can all do our jobs, but we want some help. And if a brand defines and explains how it is that brand helps to achieve for the customer XYZ and truly can showcase that in a case study, in customer proof points, do some videos, sure, like put out a commercial, be interviewed about it, talk loud and proud and stand on it, and you have to back it up. And again, we go back to what we just said in terms of monetizing business models, you need your whole org behind you. A CEO can't just say it, or a couple of folks, your, you know, CRO or your sales team. You've got to truly embody it. But then if you're a helper, you're going to be seen as that trusted brand to help get into the demand and to help align and all that. So hopefully that answered your question, and that actually helps to showcase how some of that interrelates with each other.
It made me think back when HubSpot first got started. And I got a call one day from an AE, and they're like, oh, our platform. I was like, you have a platform? Like, I think they were early, but they had provided so much. I was like, yeah, of course. I didn't even know. Like, it was, again, it was so educated. There was so much there that was helpful. And like, they were still like in the process of coining inbound marketing as a thing. But they established themselves so early. I mean, this from a content perspective alone was like, even now, I mean, you go look on their blog, right. It's not a blog. It's like a encyclopedia at this point.
Absolutely. And I'm sure in many different spaces, we can all name a couple of brands that you can turn to and truly, again, trust them, believe them. And honestly, they're probably always on, right? The budget, to your earlier point and question, isn't turned on and off when deals need to be accelerated specifically, or somebody's like, oh, I need demand right now. You can recall them. You can think about it. You can be like, oh, you know what? That's the expert in that space. I mean, I'm not going to call out some of the different brands, but you just did. So I'll play. Cisco is fantastic at that. They have a massive DevNet community, for example. Their blogs. There's another company I'm thinking of specifically. Blogs. I worked at a company where when I sent out an email for a webinar, I would get 3,000 people to register, and that's not a made-up number, pretty much with one email sent. And I was floored, flabbergasted, like, what is going on? And I would ask a bunch of people, ask the executives that were there for a while, and it's because, and again, I've done enough research on the brand now, but people cared to hear from this brand. They wanted to know what were some of the new insights, what were some of the features, what are the top new trends? This brand has people in the White House. I mean, granted, again, big brand, but it's when you develop that authenticity, you're going to get that, to your point again, demand waterfall. And that brand is seen as a huge helper.
Yeah, and a huge multiplier, a huge multiplying force. So much of it, though, even in your explanation, Alana, was intangible, a feeling, a association, right? And I'm always going to bring it back to measurement. And those things are very difficult to measure. And so I know you have very strong POV around multi-touch attribution and being able to tell that story of all the touch points, because it is rare that a brand component manifests itself as a lead source at the end of the day, right? So talk to us about why multi-touch attribution is just smarter marketing.
Absolutely. And I'm going to nitpick on one word right there, sourced versus influenced. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that too, because that is a nice and hot, juicy topic as well. But I really feel, again, if we need as a marketing team, as an org, as a go-to-market function, if we want to explain the story, we all at this point, I think, have been drilled down by from everyone from Serious Decisions to Gartner to everybody else, that the buying journey is complex, it's long, it is so, to your point, multifaceted, multi-touch. There are definitely intangible things that you definitely cannot measure, like conversations at a bar golf course between a couple of execs, right? Can't measure that. But in order to tell most of the story, you need to show the multi-touch attribution. If you just show last touch, that does not cover the 12 to 98 touch points that have happened. If you show first touch, that doesn't cover everything that's happened afterwards. And so to be able to explain how an ad or a commercial, right? CTV, you can show commercials now in so many places, a podcast, which you can do some really interesting targeting with podcasts, like really cool stuff. How that PR, AR, how all these elements, third-party articles, there's just so many things on top of events and discussions, and we know events are big, user groups, how all that plays a part in, at the end of the day, the opportunity, the pipeline. And that's one factor. But for someone like myself or even Adam or yourself in marketing, to then be able to say with multi-touch attribution models that are sophisticated enough, which touch point converts at what rate? Because then, to your very first question about budget, we can at least be able to do smarter budgeting, right? If I know that events are really great, sure, I'll put more money. But if I have data that can tell me, not just with my last touch, right, but by actual the journey, that these commercials really influence them coming back to our website. And then once they come back after that recall, they're actually closing that pipeline deal faster. Then as marketers or as folks in my, you know, I'll be able to ask for more money. We can budget accordingly. And it just gives you that better picture of understanding your customer intent, their behavior, so much more of a full picture. And we all do that in our personal lives, right? We're doing lots of research on buying a mattress or the new protein drink you want to drink. You're not just kind of like, get demo now and that's it. There's a lot more that happens behind that to be able to look at it.
You're relatively new to Firemon, right? I think it's been just a couple months, right? In terms of...
I am, yes.
Yeah. So when you come into a role, let's say you come just in Firemon now, in your first X number of days, let's say your first 90 days, right? That's always kind of the magic time of like learning. Mm-hmm.
30, 60, 90.
Does attribution sit in that, at least in terms of discovery of how it's being measured now?
I wouldn't say in 30, 60, 90 type of time frame is my first role of business to propose changes, because that looks bullish and crazy. Which maybe I am, but I'm not going to, you know, do that right away. But I am absolutely looking at dashboards, absolutely looking at how that data is showcased and collected, what is behind it, right? And literally did that about a week ago. So I think I'm around day 60 or so, and absolutely looking at it, figuring out, okay, I have our basis, now having discussions on how do we get to where we want to be. But before even that, let's define where we want to be. What is the business objective? What does the business need? Not how can the tech stack then get there? How do we implement the next BI tool? And where do we go with the tooling? And how do we get everything to sync together? That's like 5 months later or something, you know. But you have to define what are the business requirements? What do we want to be looking at? Kind of like why? So yes, absolutely, with the very early stages of understanding what is in place today, how is the attribution track today, and starting to have early conversations with leadership around what do we need to be looking at? Do you do that? I mean, are you guys also looking at attribution models and digging in?
No, Simon, what she does every quarter is they just, and she gets it from our CFO. It's a big bag of cash. Drop it on your desk and they're like, you know what, just go have fun, we'll see you at the end of the
joining your team. I'm running
we look at everything in multiple ways, right? All the different sort of touch points, first touch, last touch, equal touches across the board. And at the end of the day, my POV is there is the numbers, the singular way we show pipeline and reporting to the entire org, but then there's the analytics lens that we apply internally so that, yes, that's one view and that's the view we've blessed and that's, you know, the kind of standard across the organization, but we need to know all the nuances of all the touches. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the analytics and operations teams take a look at all the touch points, where things are converting, what the winning patterns are at the end of the day. What helps us win and what isn't helping us win? And at what point in the journey are those specific touch points hitting? Down to pieces of content, by the way.
Yeah.
Pieces of content that are working, keywords that our prospects and customers are researching, intent topics that they're surging on. Are they hitting the community pages? Like, there's so much nuance that you can get to, and you can go deep, but then being able to just up level those winning patterns and share them with the entire organization so that sales has a POV on what it takes for us to win a deal. CS has the same POV. Marketing can really kind of give that perspective of the market.
I agree that you can get into somewhat of an analysis paralysis almost, and being able to somewhat at some point be like, okay, this is what we're going with and this is what it looks like. And but too many organizations aren't as sophisticated and looking at so many of the touch points. Mm-hmm. They employ, let's say, last touch or even first touch. And so, but I think looking at that, looking at so much of the data matters. And earlier we talked about how AI and search is now playing such interesting roles in the marketing journey, right? Sometimes folks learn so much without ever going on our properties, like our websites, because so much is within search or within AI LLM models. So being able to see how that plays a role, which is really tough, but that's kind of, I think, some of the evolution we'll get to. And I think that that helps to paint the full picture. It's hard to see it otherwise.
We could go on all day. It's a great conversation, but we have a question that we ask all of our guests. It's a fun one. It is, what is the most ridiculous thing you've been asked to do in your career? And we'll caveat with the point that it can be ridiculous good or ridiculous bad.
This is a fun one, and you're right. I'm going to come up with an interesting answer. It could be good and bad, depending on how you look at it. For anyone that's kind of been around a little while prior to, I guess, the recession of the housing crisis of 2008, and then COVID definitely played roles in shifting how business gets done. They were amok. The whole world was nuts and doing things crazy. And so I was in sales, and it was a little bit of like the Wild Wild West. And there was a very large deal that I was the account executive on. And my team, the business, really wanted it closed before calendar year end, so before December 31st, to bring it into the books. And it was like, look, no holds bar. Go have fun. Go do whatever. Go do whatever the CISO wants there, but go make it happen. And I am not getting into what happened. but if you get into like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, that whole mentality, if you've ever seen The Hangover, those movies. And just, you know, picture some of that in New York City with a, you know, blank Amex card. So I'm going to let your minds wander a bit with what was done. But it was fun and it was exciting and quite ridiculous.
Did you get the deal?
The deal came in. It was over $1.5 million to $2 million. And I got lots of awards and accolades for it. I won like an AE of, you know, the year in my like region. All good news, and I have lots of the fun memories with it, and I'm actually still close to the CISO of that company. He's moved on, but good times.
And are you allowed in New York City still?
Well, I saw you about a month ago, so...
That's right. That was a dumb question. You were there. Okay, so, well, you were there. We know you were there, but whether or not you were there legally is a different question.
Although I guess I think the NYPD has a lot more on their plate than little old Alana coming in, but thankfully, like I said... The rules were different back then, but I'm still allowed. Yeah. We didn't do anything illegal. We just had lots of fun.
Yeah. We did have one person say something about a statute of limitations running out. So we've had some interesting questions. But anyway, that was a good one.
Thank you so much for having me. This was thrilling, insightful, exciting. And I love talking about that stuff. I can geek out for hours. So thanks for having me.
Oh, you got it. And it comes across. Your passion is infectious. Thank you so much, Alana.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Revenue Makers.
Do you have a revenue project you were asked to execute that had wild success? Share your story with us at sixthsense.com/revenue. We might just ask you to come on the show. And if you don't want to miss the next episode, be sure to follow along on your favorite podcast app.